Welcome to the Florida Roundup here from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, if you didn't register to vote by Florida's deadline, you will not get any more time to do so. A judge made that ruling early this morning. Now, this matter went to court after the state's voter registration website crashed on Monday. That was the deadline, and everybody was rushing to the site to get their name in. Governor Ron DeSantis did allow registrations to reopen on Tuesday, but then voters' rights groups sued the state. They argued voters should have more time. Florida does have one of the earliest voter registration deadlines in the nation.
The federal judge denied any more time, though, while also criticizing the state, writing in the order, quote, "Florida has failed to figure out how to run an election properly," end quote. This ruling comes as more than 1 million people already have cast ballots here in the Sunshine State. More than 4 million vote-by-mail ballots have been requested, and early voting begins in 10 days.
That's right. We are just a few weeks out from Election Day. So we're beginning the Florida Roundup this Friday with a closer look at voting. Lots of you have questions about your ballot, how to make sure it's filled out properly, how to turn it in, and most importantly, how to make sure it gets counted. So give us a call. Maybe it's your first time voting by mail. What are your questions and concerns about that? What's your plan to vote? What are your questions about early voting or voting on Election Day itself? Do you have concerns about the security of this election in Florida? Whatever's on your mind, call us up. We're talking voting right now on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800 to join us. Send your tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
Craig Latimer is with us. He's the president of the Florida Supervisors of Elections. His day job is the election supervisor in Hillsborough County. Craig, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
What's your reaction as a county election supervisor to the ruling this morning that Florida does not need to extend voter registration?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, the state did, in fact, extend it up till 7 p.m. on the next day. And I know there's a lot of people that took advantage of that. But, you know, I got to tell you, y'all have mentioned it several times, is, you know, what's your plan? Have a plan. Yeah. This is no different than if you're going to go vote at 6:30 p.m. on election day and you get in your car and it doesn't start or you got a flat tire, you're going to get shut out. So, you know, have a plan in place to be able to get your vote in. To get your voice heard.
Sure. I guess in that scenario, it's on the voter if it's his or her own car versus if it's a state car. In this case, the state car broke down, right? The state voter registration website. What do you make of the judge's statement that despite being the launching pad for missions to the moon, Florida, he wrote, has failed to figure out how to run an election properly? A task simpler than rocket science is what he wrote in the order.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting comment that he made for sure. Other states have had issues with the elections too, but, you know, we have 67 dedicated supervisors of elections that are the best advocates for voters in this state. And I got to tell you, I think Florida's in a great position to be the shining star on election night here. You know, we've been doing no-excuse vote by mail since 2002, and usually about a third or more of our voters vote by mail every election. So this isn't something new to us. This is being hyped a lot in the national press. But, you know, we've got a lot of good laws around this. For instance, I can begin processing and tabulating vote-by-mail ballots 22 days before the election. By law, we have to upload the early vote results the Monday before the election. So election night, shortly after the polls close, the canvassing board's going to order us to go ahead and pull those out of queue, push them up, and get them out. And we're going to have a lot of unofficial results on election night, and then the precincts are going to start rolling in.
Right, and we're going to talk a lot about counting of the votes and reporting of the votes and taking your questions for the next half hour or so. Craig Latimer is with us, the president of Florida Supervisors of Elections. 305-995-1800, our statewide phone number to connect with Craig and ask your questions about the process of voting if you're a first-time vote-by-mail, 305-995-1800. One other question, though, about the voter registration trouble that Florida experienced this week, Craig. Have you or your office heard from people who tried but failed to register before the extended deadline, Tuesday at 7 p.m.?
We did hear the first day there was on that October 5th, there were several people that we knew were having difficulties, but they were, you know, taken care of the next day. I didn't get any calls from anybody else that might have tried to get in after that 7 p.m. time.
Craig, let's talk a little bit about voting by mail. 1.4 million vote-by-mail ballots already returned in Florida. And as you said, Florida pre-counts the ballots, unlike some other states that won't even begin counting the mail-in ballots until the polls close. We have a process to pre-count vote-by-mail ballots. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, certainly a lot more people are planning to vote this way. And so can you tell us a little bit about the process? Because people can track their vote-by-mail ballot and see if it's been registered. Can you take us through the process? Once someone fills out the ballot, drops it in the mail, how does the ballot progress from there? How does it get into your hands and counted?
Right. So, you know, two things. You can mail it back to the office, or you can drop it off. In my county, I have four offices, and right now you can drop it at any office, or you can always drop it at an early vote site during early voting. So again, in my county, I have 26 early vote sites. You can go to any one of those early vote sites during early voting and drop your ballot off in the ballot box at those sites. Those are all then brought back to our Election Service Center. We use a lot of technology. On your envelope, there's a barcode, and basically that's going to identify who you are. It's also going to tell us this is a good envelope that we sent out, and when that gets processed back to our office, it's then going to cancel your ability to vote in person on election day or early voting. The signatures are then compared on the envelope. You have to sign that oath, and that signature is compared against signatures that we have on file. If for some reason you forget to sign that, or the signature doesn't match, we're going to try and immediately reach out to you, because there's a cure for that process. And the voter has some responsibility now. There's an affidavit that needs to be filled out, and they have to furnish us with a copy of one of the acceptable forms of ID, and then that signature is cured. But you said it. You can track that ballot back. So the voter has a lot of control over this. In my county, we have an additional service. You can opt in with a cell number and or an email, and we'll actually text you when your ballot hits our office or email you and let you know it's here. And then you can continue to further track it and see that it's going to be received, and then it's eventually going to show us counted.
And a quick follow-up. What if someone planned to vote by mail, but they've changed their mind? We've had a number of listeners pose this question to us. They're worried that the post office slowdowns mean their ballot may not make it back in time. They've changed their mind. They now want to vote in person, and they want to know what the procedure is to do that to make sure their vote is counted, since they've already received a mail-in ballot.
Yeah, and let me address the post office that you brought up. We're watching this very carefully, and we watched it in the primary election. And I can tell you right now that if there's a ballot mailed locally, we're getting it the next day. I mean, literally one day after it's signed and the date's put on it and it's postmarked, we're getting it the next day. But if you have a vote-by-mail ballot and you decide, you know what, I don't want to vote by mail, I want to vote in person, that isn't a problem whatsoever. You don't even have to bring that ballot and surrender it at the polling site. You're going to go into an in-person site. You're going to check in with one of the approved forms of photo and signature identification. And as soon as you check in, it's going to cancel that vote-by-mail ballot. So that if you did decide, well, let me just mail this in and see what happens, it's not going to be accepted. You've already voted.
So that, Craig, that clears that up, because a lot of people did wonder how that process might work. So many questions, Tom, for Craig Latimer, the state supervisor of elections, as we get close to Election Day.
Craig, regarding the curing of the signature, I know there's lots of questions around that, and we're going to take your phone calls here in a moment. You mentioned how your office, a voter can provide their email address and a phone number so your office can reach out to that voter if there is an issue with their signature, for instance, matching what was on file. You mentioned texting. Does your office call that phone number, or is it solely a text outreach?
So two things. The service that I said you could opt into to furnish a cell number and or email address, that's to notify you when your ballot has returned to our office. But you can physically track that ballot right on every supervisor's website. In every county, and this is by law, on the back of that envelope, we're asking for additional information, a cell number, email address, home phone number, you know, anything that you'll give us. And the whole reason for that is so that we can quickly reach out to you and get in touch with you. You know, if you don't give me any of that information, the only thing I can do now is mail you a letter to the address that you got this ballot.
Right.
And, you know, what's that going to take?
Yeah.
Three or four days, and you're going to have to turn it around.
Yeah, let me just, so there's perfect clarity here. If someone does put a phone number down, will it be a phone call or will it be a text message?
Yeah, no, it would be a phone call to contact
okay.
if there's a signature mismatch.
And
yeah,
because
the only text message is going to be, we received your ballot.
Gotcha. On that phone call, if you put that phone number down, because so many of us no longer have landlines with local area codes, we have cell phones that we've had for, you know, decades and maybe just moved to 813 or a 305 area, can the offices make those long-distance phone calls to area codes that may not be a Florida area code?
Absolutely. And if they don't answer, we're going to leave them a message, too.
And, Craig, what's the percentage of ballots that are thrown out, not counted, because of a signature mismatch? And what's your response to critics of that whole process? They worry about votes that get invalidated due to a signature mismatch.
Yeah, I can tell you that the ballots that aren't accepted because of a signature mismatch it's a very small number. What we do get, though, is people that mail these ballots in after the election or on election day, and those are going to be rejected flat out because the ballot has to be in the supervisor of elections office by 7 p.m. on election day, not postmarked. So there's a tremendous amount, and this goes back to a little bit of voter responsibility, too, but let me just share with you anecdotally, in the primary election, we had about 700 ballots where there was a signature mismatch or they forgot to sign it. We immediately reached out, contacted people. Of that 700, 346 of them corrected it. The other people that we got in contact with just never followed up. You know, it's the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You know, if we're telling you, here's what you need to do, the voter needs to take some responsibility.
Right. And if voters out there, you've missed the deadline to register to vote in Florida. A judge has ruled it will not be extended. And right now, we're taking your questions about voting. What are your questions about casting a ballot? Many thousands of you have already done that around the state, and early voting gets underway in earnest in about a week. It's 305-995-1800 to join us here on the Florida Roundup. Your voting and balloting questions answered. Our guest is Craig Latimer, president of Florida Supervisors of Elections. Brenda is in Orlando. Hi, Brenda. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm so happy to speak with you. My husband and I both requested mail-in ballots for both primary and general elections way back in May. They've arrived. We've been able to track them online. My question has to do with the instructions, and I realize how important it is to follow the instructions as closely as I can. It specifies a black ballpoint pen be used to mark the ballot. I did call the Orange County Supervisor of Elections, and the kind representative there said just not a marker that would bleed through, but so many pens these days kind of look like a ballpoint, but they're not a ballpoint. And I do not want my ballot to be disqualified for something that minor. I'm happy to take my answer off the air, and thank you very much for taking my call.
These little details matter.
Well,
Brenda, Craig, what about that? Would that cause a ballot to be tossed?
Yeah, absolutely not. And, you know, we see ballots where people use, felt tip pens, and it can bleed through. And it can actually bleed through into a different mark on the other side, you know, a different oval. Those ballots are duplicated. There's a statute and a rule about how to duplicate ballots. It's a very orderly process. And that ballot would be duplicated. It's no different. You know, we get overseas military and civilians. They can fax their ballot back to us. But then we have to take that fax and duplicate it onto an official ballot. So this is a process that takes place all the time. Mm. So you're not going to get your ballot disqualified if you didn't use black ink. If you use blue ink or whatever you used, it's not going to get disqualified. If it's necessary to duplicate it, it will be duplicated in accordance with statute.
Our next caller in Plant City, Gail, on line 3. Go ahead, Gail. You're on the radio.
Hi there. Mine is not a question so much as it is a comment. I registered to volunteer at and to vote on. I'm nervous. I registered to vote absentee in March. I'd never got my primary ballot in the mail. I'm in South Carolina as a student. I never got my primary one. I have not yet gotten my ballot for this election. I called on Wednesday, and I spoke to someone in the Hillsborough County office, and she said it would be mailed out the next day and that I should get it by Saturday. My mail has come and gone. I haven't got my ballot yet. You know, when I was in Japan, I got it on time, and I faxed it back in, no problem. I'm just a couple of states away, and I haven't gotten my ballot yet, and I'm really kind of nervous about that. If I have to drive down to Florida and vote, I will, but I don't want to.
Gail, have you checked online to see if the ballot has been mailed out?
When I spoke to the person at the elections office, she said it had not been mailed out.
Okay. Craig, any help
so
for Gail?
We can work with the United States Postal Service to try and investigate and track this. I just need you to recontact our office so we can get your information. The biggest thing. So that's let me give you a number, as a matter of fact, that you can call that should get you straight through. And that'll be area code 813-367-8827.
8827? All right. Thank you very much.
Great, Gail. Best of luck there in I guess in South Carolina, but voting here in Florida as a Florida resident studying in South Carolina. 305-995-1800, the phone number. Your questions about the process of voting, making sure that your ballot counts in this election. Craig Latimer is the Hillsborough election supervisor. He's also the president of the Florida Supervisors of Elections.
Let's go to Carlos in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Carlos. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I drive for Uber, Lyft, and Postmates, and I'm very interested in volunteering to either help people get to the polls during early voting or drive people to ballot boxes so they could drop their mail-in ballots. But I've had a great deal of difficulty contacting an organization that can direct me as to how to do that. Can you give me some information on that?
You know, Craig, in communities all over the country, there are Souls to the Polls drives that help get people to the polls on the weekend before an election. Those are usually done through faith-based groups. What's your advice for Carlos?
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct. It is a lot of times faith-based or party-driven. And, you know, I know in my county that our bus line gives free rides to the polls on Election Day. So, there is other services that are out there for sure. But I would just tell Carlos to try and start, you know, reaching out to some faith-based organizations or to the parties and see if there's any programs that they have that he could get involved with.
Yeah, Carlos, I hope that answers your question. And if you Google that or even Souls to the Polls in your county, you'll find, I'm sure, lots of churches that would love your help getting people out to the polls. It's an election like no other, guys, with so much interest in balloting, whether you're voting by mail, whether you plan to vote early, or whether you plan to vote on Election Day. What is your plan to vote? We're taking your calls right now with Craig Latimer. He's president of the Florida Supervisors of Elections. He's going to have a busy few weeks ahead, and it's busy here on the Florida Roundup, too. Call us up now, 305-995-1800. More of your questions answered about voting next on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking about how to vote, the method of voting, the process of voting. 4 million vote-by-mail requests in Florida. Over a million have already been returned. Early voting just 10 days away, and the election ends on what traditionally was called Election Day, although we have election weeks now, frankly, with the ability to vote, on November 3rd. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or on Twitter, at Florida Roundup. Craig Latimer is the president of Florida Elections Florida Supervisors of Elections. He's the election supervisor in Hillsborough County. Craig, you and your colleagues, I think, got together with the FBI recently and state law enforcement officials to kind of look at worst case scenarios when it comes to Election Day and the process of collecting votes and counting votes. What can you share with us about those scenarios that you went through with federal and state law enforcement officials?
You know, it's not unusual at all for us to work with our federal partners and our state and local partners. We actually meet with them several times a year to talk about cybersecurity and other issues, physical security. So, you know, we're just going to look at different scenarios and make sure that we have contingency plans in place to be able to continue to operate. That's all.
Craig,
is
I have
it
a,
any different than what it was, say, 8 years ago, though?
I'm sorry.
Is it any different than what it was, say, 8 years ago, prior to what we saw,
yeah,
for instance?
Yeah, we've got a pandemic right now.
Well, I mean in terms of voting security.
We've got a pandemic right now.
I'm terms of, sorry, I'm asking in terms of voting security.
Oh, you know, I think that's something that continues to evolve. It's something that, you know, we're going to continue to get better at. We're going to, you know, continue working with our federal, state, and local partners to make sure that, you know, we've got the right practices and protocols in place.
And all the kudos to you and all of the statewide supervisors of elections in all of Florida's counties, because you have a hard job in any election. This year, I think you have a really tough job. I want to ask you about some of the scenarios that were gamed out heading into Election Day when you met with the FBI and state and local officials, stuff like American Patriots protesters blocking polling places, ransomware hitting election servers, mail-in ballots disappearing and no one knows why, disinformation on social media saying that polling locations have been turned into COVID testing sites. You know, in the past, we might have dismissed these scenarios as crazy or conspiracy theorizing. This year, though, it's fair to say that some of these scenarios could actually occur. I want to begin by asking you about the possibility of people showing up to block or monitor polling places, because that has been a concern in recent days. What's the plan to respond to that type of scenario?
Yes, and that's a great one, too, and thank you. Again, you know, Florida's got some great laws out there. To be a poll watcher in this state, you have to be nominated to it by the party or a candidate. And then the county, my office, actually verifies that you're a registered voter in my county, and we credential you. You have to wear these credentials in the polling site. You're not allowed to roam around the polling site. You can only speak to the clerk. You can't speak to voters. You're watching, basically, to make sure that things are operating efficiently. We also have the no solicitation zone of 150 feet from the polling site, the early vote site, or the polling room door. This is so that voters aren't getting intimidated or hassled inside the zone. So there's some great laws in place already. And, you know, in every polling site in Florida, the supervisor has a position that's called a poll deputy. Now, this is not a uniform deputy. This is a person that's sworn in by the sheriff, and it's their job to keep order. And you know how they do that job? If there's a problem, they pick the phone up. They call our office. If it needs immediate help, they're going to call law enforcement. They're trained to do that.
And did you game out some of those scenarios, you know, where you might have to call for backup, for extra security at polling places?
Absolutely. But I'll tell you right now, we've called law enforcement to our polling sites before. I've had, you know, candidates whose campaign workers have gotten into altercations outside the 150-foot mark. And law enforcement will respond to that. So, again, that's not an unusual scenario. There's been incidents I've seen around the state where fistfights took place between campaigners. So, you know, law enforcement, we communicate with them. I can tell you in my county, every jurisdiction knows what polling sites are in their jurisdiction and where they are, both Election Day and at early voting. And again, it goes back to that communication.
Yeah. I think the other one that people have so much curiosity about is ransomware getting into the election servers. And I know when you've appeared on this program before, you've talked about that, the security of the servers and the equipment that tabulates our votes. Can you talk a little bit about what's being done to secure those pieces of equipment that run the election?
So in Florida, by law, again, The server that houses our election management system is a standalone air gap system, not connected to the internet, not connected to the intranet. The only way we get information.
Aren't the modems connected to the internet, though? Aren't the modems connected to the internet?
No, they aren't. There's ways to do that that they're not connected to the internet.
So, so that's not true then.
The only way we get the information. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The only way we get information off of that is through a thumb drive, and that thumb drive never goes back in to that server after it's been someplace else. So, and back to your statement about the modems, you know, remember that on election night, that's unofficial results that are being transmitted. I'm not aware of any counties. There may be some counties that are still using that encrypted method. I'm not. I'm using a virtual private network, and so we're not hitting the internet at all.
Craig, let me ask you about the scenarios regarding mis and disinformation, the wildfire that can be social media and the fake messaging that can happen there. What can election supervisors do to counteract some of those messages that may wind up in social media feeds of voters during early voting or on election day?
Yeah, one of the things that we constantly put out there is get your information from a trusted source. You know, if something's out there and you've got a question about it, pick the phone up and call your supervisor of elections office. Get information from a trusted source. You know, we saw this in 2016. Quite frankly, you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, our elections getting hacked. And I would offer to you, our elections did not get hacked, but our confidence in the process sure did. And that's something that we got to constantly guard at. You know, that's why we try and put out as much information as we can, too. And our website's a good site for that. There's a tremendous amount of information on the website.
What keeps you up at night, Craig? What's the worst case scenario on election night in Florida?
Yeah, you know what keeps me up at night? My wife's labradoodle. He barks.
Oh, come on now. I mean, you've got to be thinking through worst-case scenarios.
You know, this isn't something we just woke up and decided to do 3 weeks or a month ago. We've been planning for this, and we plan for every election. You know, we have after-actions for every election. What can we do better? How can we do something differently? You know, there's a tremendous amount of contingency planning that we do. You know, so we're ready. I mean, we've been planning for this, and right now we're executing our plan, and the other supervisors are too. There's a tremendous amount of pre-work and planning that goes into this. You know, in my county alone, I've got 239 election day polling sites. We've got to make sure every one of those is accessible, ADA accessible, that, you know, that we can get in and out of the thing, that there's adequate parking. I mean, there's just a lot that goes into this that people don't realize. I kid about that people think that elections are, I go vote and go home and turn the TV on to see who won or lost. There's a little bit more to it.
Oh, yes. Christy in Cocoa Beach. Hi, Christy. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. As we all know, not just here in Cocoa Beach, that this is going to be one of the most important states to watch for the decision of who's going to be president. And, Craig, this is for you. I've already and had the phone call come back that their signature didn't match. Now they're still waiting for that to be done. What if we mail in our ballots, it takes you guys a while to go, the signature doesn't work, and we run out of time of fixing it? How can you make me feel secure that that's not going to happen?
Yeah, so first off, you've got up till 2 days after the election to cure that signature. And I will tell you that in my office, every day that we get ballots in from the post office and from our drop-off boxes, they are processed immediately that day. Signature verification is done, and we know that day that that hit our office, and we're going to immediately reach out to try and get in contact with you to cure that. And again, you know, you can go on your supervisor's website, and you can track that ballot back and see what the status of it is. You know, if that ballot's been received and several days have gone by and you haven't been contacted, you can pretty much rest assured that your signature matched.
Let's take a call here. We've got, let's see, where is Kaylee in Tampa? Go ahead. You are on the radio.
Thank you for taking my call. It's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, sorry.
That's okay. No big deal. I live in Tampa, Hillsborough County, and I like the caller from South Carolina. I originally signed up to vote by mail. I never received my primary vote. My provisional vote did not count, wasn't in the tracking. So I called and I rescinded the mail-in ballot for the general election, for the presidential election, because I have no faith in Hillsborough County whatsoever. Three of my neighbors were in the same situation, and I advised them to call and cancel, and I'm going to take all three of them with me to early election on 10/19, in order to ensure, well, more or less ensure, that our votes are going to count. And I
Kelly, I'm sorry that you didn't get your vote by mail ballot, but I'm glad you do have a plan in place, and, you know, encourage you, if you're okay voting in person, vote in person. We're going to have a safe and healthy environment to vote in person, either early vote or election day.
Well, Kelly, I guess we'll see.
Kelly, thanks for joining us. Appreciate that. Craig, let me ask you about the validity of the election. That has been called into question by the president and the vice president of the United States. What can you say to Florida voters regarding the validity of the Florida vote that will close at 7 p.m. on November 3rd and with the unofficial results due by that next Saturday?
Yeah, a couple of things. First off, and again, you know, by law in Florida, before every election, every supervisor conducts what's called a public logic and accuracy test. This is done under the eyes of the canvassing board. A random sample of tabulators to be used at early vote election day and the high-speed scanners for vote by mail. We run what we call a test deck through it. We know what the outcome should be. The logic is that it can see every single spot on that ballot where a vote can be cast, and the accuracy is that it counts correctly. We know what the outcome should be. It does. It counts correctly. The machines are then locked down, sealed, and finally deployed out in the community where voting takes place. After the election, there's a manual audit that takes place. And you can do it one of two ways. The canvassing board can randomly select a race and randomly select precincts. And then the elections workers would go find all of the ballots from election day, early vote, and vote by mail for those precincts. And they would then sit down and hand count those ballots to ensure, once again, that the machines counted correctly.
Craig, I got 30 seconds left.
All right. An electronic audit that's certified by the state, it requires a 20% of your precincts. I do 100% of my precincts to verify that my tabulator counted correctly.
So do you feel that there'll be any reason for the President of the United States to question the validity of the Florida vote?
I don't. You know, the results that we have, and this is all, again, done under the canvassing board, okay. Ultimately it's going to go to the state, and the state's the one that's going to certify the final state election.
Craig, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much for spending it with us here on the Florida Roundup. Craig Latimer, Hillsborough County Election Supervisor. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
I'm retired. I retired in 2003 from Verizon after 30 years, and then I retired from the city of St. Pete after 10 years in 2018. I have a daughter, and had it not been for the changes made through Obamacare, I would not have been able to maintain her on my insurance because of her age, okay? But I was able to keep her on my insurance until she turned 26. You know, which was good for her because she couldn't really afford insurance on her own. Now, the social justice, I'm kind of torn in terms of how it's played out in our community, in particular after George Floyd and all of the demonstrations that were going on, and then the rioting. I really have a problem with the rioting because it doesn't solve anything. And in the end, it's our community that is impacted by whatever happens. But I like that my local police department has taken steps to try to minimize how things happen in terms of the policing. I like that they made some changes even as an African American, I want to have the ability. I want not just for me, but for my family. I have a granddaughter who's 4 years old, and I want to see her grow up and have the same opportunities that I had. Struggle that it might have been, I did have an opportunity, because I would not have been able to go to, at the time, GTE and apply for a job and get the type of job that I had in 1973 when I walked in at 23 years old. I don't think I've missed an election since I registered to vote in 1974, I think it might have been. And I try to encourage the people that are around me to vote, because that's sometimes the only voice that we have, is to step up and vote. And too many people bled and died for the right for us to vote, and for us to ignore that right, it's really like a slap in the face. I'm hoping and praying that with this election, a lot of the young people that I know, they are stepping up. They're registering to vote, and they're speaking their mind about injustices and things, and they're going about it the right way, the way in which my generation did in the 60s. You know, they're marching, they're protesting. And I think they now have, I guess you could say, clear vision of what is really happening in this country concerning African Americans. And I think it's very important to them.
Well, that was Phyllis Young of St. Petersburg. WUSF's Bradley George produced this audio postcard as we've been listening to voters in the I-4 corridor this election. It's part of America Amplified, a national reporting initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. More to come here on the Florida Roundup. Don't go away.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, there are a half dozen statewide questions on the ballot this fall that you will vote up or down, Florida. We're going to talk about two of them right now. One involves the fight to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour in this state. There's another ballot amendment you'll consider. It would allow for open primaries in Florida in statewide political offices. Give us a call, 305-995-1800, tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
When you vote in a primary now, you get a different ballot depending upon your political party registration. Republican voters get Republican ballots. Democrats get a Democratic ballot. If you're not registered with either political party, you get still another ballot. But this year's Amendment 3 would change that, creating an open primary system for state legislators, the governor, and other statewide political races. Miami healthcare billionaire Mike Fernandez has helped fund the effort.
I do not want to hurt either the Republican nor the Democratic Party. This is not, I want to destroy either party. I just want to encourage both parties to talk to people that are more centrist.
Now, both the Republican and Democratic parties of Florida are against Amendment 3. Former Democratic House member Sean Shaw says it would make it more difficult for black candidates to be nominated.
At the altar of moderation, I've got to sacrifice African-American electeds, Hispanic electeds, progressive electeds, and it's more expensive. I'm not sure that's a deal that I'm willing to do and that I think is a deal worth doing.
Okay, so that's Amendment 3. We'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. But first, Amendment 2. It's also known as the Fight for 15. You, the voters, will vote Amendment 2 up or down. If you vote yes, the state's minimum wage would go up over time to $15 an hour. Let's go now to Gary Fineout, reporter with Politico, who's been covering the ballot amendment measures. Hi, Gary. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good to have you on the show, as always. So let's begin with Amendment 2. It would raise the minimum wage in this state to $15 an hour, but not right away. How would this proposal work if it should pass?
Well, if it passes, it would be a sort of a staged approach where it would go up a certain amount over several years before it eventually reaches the $15. And it would, you know, it would be doing it on a recurring yearly basis. I mean, in actuality, we have a index now in Florida, which is supposed to be tied to inflation. But as the economy's ebbed and flowed, it really hasn't increased it very much from when voters first adopted it.
Yeah. A recent UNF poll found a majority of Florida voters support the idea of raising the minimum wage. But we can certainly expect a campaign from business interests on our airwaves and on social media. What's the argument against Amendment 2?
Well, I think you can see that the main argument is coming from especially people in the hospitality industry. They're basically... they contend that, especially now after the pandemic, that this will continue to really harm those industries. And so you have the restaurants and the hotels, people in the service industry who are very much opposed to it, contending that it will lead to even more job losses if it's in fact passed. And you've seen that reflected in some of the support, opposition to it. Even coming from some of the newspapers and other entities around the state who have a lot of questions as to whether or not what they think is going to happen if it passes.
Hey, Gary, it's Tom. Would this amendment affect the tipped wage, minimum wage, which is well below the $8 and change untipped minimum wage?
As I understand it, it would raise the minimum wage for non-tipped employees.
Right.
So, my reading is I'm not a lawyer, but the way I read the amendment to apply that it says it applies to non-tipped employees.
You've probably read more of these amendments than most lawyers, though, Gary, through the years as a journalist. Rennie in Delray Beach has a question comment about the effort to raise the minimum wage in Florida by constitutional amendment to $15 an hour. Rennie, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
Thank you for allowing me to participate. I waited so long, I almost forgot my own name.
It's Rennie, and you're with us now talking about the $15 minimum wage amendment. Go ahead.
I remember getting a letter from my former congressman saying they were pleased to support such a thing, and my response was that the much-needed raise would be meaningless if it's not implemented immediately, because inflation would eat it up, and those fascists know it. It should also be accompanied, and there are going to be people fainting all over the place, with a price freeze on essential goods and services, so that the wage has economic meaning to the people who need the benefit.
Rennie, I appreciate the idea. That's certainly far beyond the language that's included in this ballot amendment. But, Gary, what about Rennie's concern about inflation? Inflation, the official inflation where these things are tied to, has been incredibly low. But for any folks living in a good part of Florida, between the cost of living, insurance, housing, inflation is much, much higher. So what would be the real effect of a $15 minimum wage, so say the supporters of it?
Well, I think the supporters would say, yes, they would argue that the whole point of minimum wages is to create a certain threshold in which people who get paid that are able to afford things that also are components of the economy. The idea being that, I don't think it's any secret in the state that, especially in certain places, especially like South Florida, where the cost of housing has just been, and we've seen it with the effect of the pandemic, where even though we've had all these job dislocations in South Florida, that for some intriguing reason, it has not affected the real estate market. In fact, it's seemed to have done the opposite effect. So I think obviously there is there's an argument from the supporter side that people need a decent wage in order to pay for the continuing costs of living that are going up. But like I said, you have the opponents who are taking the position that if you have this mandate in place, that what they'll wind up doing is that businesses will wind up reducing their hiring, laying people off, converting jobs to part-time. That's the argument that the other side has.
All right. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Gary, let's explain Amendment 3 a bit more. We do have a closed primary system, so Democrats only vote in Democratic primaries and vice versa for Republicans. But of course, here in Florida, about a third of the electorate doesn't belong to either party. so they cannot vote in primary elections. How are the supporters of Amendment 3 trying to make the argument that open primaries would increase voter participation, would be better for all voters?
Well, right. I mean, the people who are pushing this are basically saying, look, you need to open the door to all voters throughout the state, regardless of their party affiliation. I think it's important to note that this is actually not a new concept, sort of. Actually, in 1998, voters in Florida voted to open the primaries. The issue is that basically is there's been a loophole that's allowed people to then close the primaries. It's called the write-in loophole, and allows write-in candidates to participate. And basically, both parties have been very skilled at exploiting this loophole, and the legislature has had no interest in fixing it. And so I just want to put that into context, that the voters have actually kind of said in the past they wanted open primaries. The big difference here, of course, from that concept, which is just to allow anybody to vote if there's only candidates from one party, is that this one is this whole top two concept, where you have the top two candidates would go from the primary to the general election, regardless of party affiliation. It's called jungle primary, sort of, in other states, although the supporters don't like that title. And that's the thing that's got everyone, at least from the party standpoint, you can tell that that's the thing that's got the most on edge, is that the idea that you would have a general election where you'd have two Democrats or two Republicans. And in California, that's happened. I mean, Kamala Harris, basically, in her last election as, you know, in terms of her elections, one of her elections attorney general and the election senator, that's how it worked. So that's the concern that the parties have, is this whole top two candidate thing.
Yeah, right. Both parties want to preserve the status quo, obviously. You know, there are a number of ballot amendments that voters will consider, but we decided to focus on these two today because they have gotten so much attention. You know, in the minute we have left, you've been reporting on the presidential race. We're hearing President Trump might hold a rally in Florida this weekend, even though he is still sick with COVID-19. Before we let you go, any news on that?
I haven't seen anything this morning. I mean, it appears to be a lot of swirling still going on with that. So I wish I had something breaking to tell you about that. Look, I'm still trying to figure out what's happening in the next week's debate in Miami.
Yeah, exactly.
Then maybe we're going to have a debate under the 22nd. So, you know, it's election season, and crazy things happen all the time. And there you go.
Yeah. So clear as mud. We're as soon as we have more information, though, we'll get it out there. But yeah, what an election season. And Tom, you know, it's always so great to have Gary Finat on this program. Nobody better to break it down for us.
Not at all. Gary, thanks for sharing your reporting with us here. Always appreciate it, sir.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
Gary Finat with us from Tallahassee. He covers state government politics for Politico with us via FaceTime audio. You know, when we take a look at voting and really the election season here, Melissa, I continue to be struck that it really is a season anymore. We continue to talk about Election Day, but November 3rd is when the voting ends. It's really not Election Day any longer. That's just simply the last day to cast your ballot.
That's right.
Early voting starts in 10 days, and over 4 million Floridians have requested vote-by-mail ballots, and more than 1.4 million have already turned them in.
And we may or may not have a result on election night, so let's be mindful of that. And thanks for listening. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Denise Royal and Heather Schatz are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. The Director of Radio Operations at WLRN is Peter Mertz. He's also our Technical Director. We get engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon.